Maybe it depends on Eretz Yisrael versus
right.
In them.
Like, I'm sure the Prime Minister of Israel gets falafel.
Even at a state dinner, probably. Hello, hello, come on in.
Hello.
How are you? Please. We're happy to see you. You've had so many good simchas. I just saw your son-in-law at the convention that I was at. In fact, you should know, at a convention of over 200 Rabbanim, at one of the manager plenary sessions, somebody who had been visiting Los Angeles last week specifically mentioned such a wonderful speaker and a darshan, Rabbi Stephen Weil from Los Angeles.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I thought they were going to mention me, and then they said, it's a young, up-and-coming.
That was Los Angeles.
No, before they got to the word Los Angeles. Now, once they said Los Angeles, I'm pretty sure it wasn't going to be me. There you go. I'm sorry. Okay. So we are up to part two of one of our heterim. One of our great leniencies in heterim is davar ha'ola shocha malachim, that in order for a food to be prohibited for bishalakum, one of the conditions is it has to be such a fancy food that it would be appropriate to be at a royal table. So we have discussed some of the other aspects of what exactly this means. Why should that be so? Why should that be a leniency? Just because it's not, who cares? But today we will get into some of the real nitty-gritty, both of determining issues of time and place, because obviously we were just joking about falafel balls, Yom HaTzmut. We didn't have a shir last week, so I said maybe we would have a shir on cooking falafel balls. Is that a problem of bishalakum? So somebody said, well, is that something you would eat at a royal table? Is that ola al shocha malachim? And I said, well, maybe it depends. Depends if maybe in Israel, yes, and maybe in other places, no. And that's the question. Do you make such distinctions? And if that's the case, would you say, well, if you're in America, you can be lenient, and in Israel, you'd have to be machmir? Or, you know, that's an interesting question. We'll start off just briefly. Then I want to get into the real definitional question, which we've alluded to a few times in the past weeks, which is, how do we define this issue? Is this just anything that a fancy person is willing to eat, even in the privacy of their own home, or does it have to do with a royal meal? That's a very, very important question, and we'll see some ramifications, including from some contemporary kashrus organizations about that, some very interesting ideas. And then we will also conclude with an application to two things. One is canned foods, which I think a few weeks ago someone asked me about, so we're going to get to that tonight. Potatoes is a good example which fleshes out certain issues, and within the last 100-plus years has been a subject of major debate about potatoes. And that will also transition us into there's two remaining aspects. At the end of tonight, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, we will have two remaining aspects, subcategories of this category. We will still have one more shiur on this topic, because there's still two more subcategories. And then, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the week after that, we will then transition to our final stage of learning about Bishalakum, which is the whole issue of what participation or to what extent is there, what involvement of a Jew mitigate everything, because then it wouldn't be defined as Bishul Akum, a non-Jew cooking, it would be Bishul Yisrael, a Jew's cooking. So that's, of course, where the famous issues, again, which we're familiar with, but we'll have to learn inside, if the Jew turns on the burner, the pilot light, all those different issues, some of which are very fascinating when it comes to contemporary kashrus, what they have to do, right? Certain kashrus organizations now use timers and different things, remote control gadgets, which are just interesting to learn about. But again, it's very relevant even in our own homes when we have people coming in and out, et cetera. And it's certainly important to know for all the restaurants that we eat at, since many of them, when you look at behind the counter, let alone in the kitchen, you don't always see Jews. And the question is, how can we eat a food that's being cooked, again, despite the issue of the ingredients? So the issue of time and place, so to speak, of how do we define a royal table? You know, based on what President Washington ate or President Bush or the Tsar, or, you know, how do you figure this out? So the truth is, again, since I don't want to focus on this too much and it's not such a fascinating issue, it's just a question of more of a fact or an assumption. So very succinctly, I started off the sheet by quoting from the conclusions of the Sefer of the Chel Kas Binyamin. There's a Sefer which we've quoted a few times already. This is a contemporary Sefer by Rav Binyamin Cohn of Brooklyn, Ir HaKodesh, New York, Medinas HaKodesh. And he writes the following, one line. V'kosvu ha-poskim, t'hochin baze achar, kol makom u-makom, kefimash ola, al shochan malachim sham. That's a typo with the two als. We go based on every place has its own definition, meaning in America, we will use what's considered a fancy chashuv food in America. to be lenient or to be strict. And that will have no bearing on what they're doing in Eretz Yisrael, which has no bearing on what they're doing in London, which has no bearing on what they're doing in Melbourne. In theory, one could say we'd have to ask Israeli poskim this question, but therefore it's possible that the joke I mentioned before would actually be not a joke at all. Again, there's no question that falafel balls are not a fancy food in America. But perhaps in Eretz Yisrael you would be more machmir. Because perhaps if that's such a staple, and they would even eat that at a more official fancy function, if that's the case, you have to find out, then you would be machmir. Just like we mentioned a few weeks ago, we mentioned it in passing because it was not the topic, but we mentioned that some of the poskim discuss tortillas. Because even though tortillas, in most of the world, even where they're eaten, are not a fancy food, apparently in Mexico they are even eaten at a state dinner or something to that effect. So if you're eating them in Mexico, then you'd have to be more careful to make sure that they were either mutter from some other way, or else you wouldn't be able to eat them, as opposed to eating them here, presumably, again, as long as the ingredients are kosher, but there's not going to be a bishul akum problem. What about the following? And it's apropos to this example of tortillas, but it could be any other food that you think of. What about a food that is produced in a country which has one standard, but then is exported and eaten by you, let's say in Baltimore, and, well, again, in whichever direction. It's cooked in a country that nobody eats such a food because it's too fancy or it's too whatever. So it's, if you were there, ironically, maybe you'd be lenient. But in America, this is a fancy food. So do we have to be machmir, or can we have, do we have a right to be lenient? Because after all, where it was cooked by the non-Jew, it wasn't so fancy. And, of course, in the other direction. So, for example, a tortilla, right? I imagine that a really good tortilla would be one that would be made in Mexico. Right? I'm sure there's different kinds, but I assume the better ones are the ones actually made there. So if it's made in Mexico, do I have a right to be makil because I'm eating it in Baltimore and here it's not a fancy food? Or do I have to say no? Where it was made, it was Ola al-Shulchan Malachim, and therefore it's a real problem. So this is addressed in the next source, both the English and the Hebrew. This is from, again, I'm not even sure what the word is, it's like a halachic pamphlet called Halacha Brura. Again, the text is in English, and he has footnotes in Hebrew. We've seen this once or twice before. And he says the following: the principle of being fit for the royal table is determined by the country where it was exported to. As opposed to, he says, the principle of being edible in a raw state. You'll remember that a month ago or so we were learning one of the other conditions is that the only prohibition of food cooked by a non-Jew is if it is not edible or at least regularly eaten raw. And therefore the cooking of the non-Jew is something very significant. But if it's carrots, which we regularly eat raw, so the fact that the non-Jew cooked them for us is not considered significant. And therefore that per se would not have been a problem. So there also the same question could have been asked. How do you deter certain foods are cultural? Again, certain foods are inedible objectively raw. But many foods, it's a question of context. And in certain countries, they might be willing to eat it raw. In certain countries, they might not. So here in this very same source, he says, there in that question of where do you eat it raw or not, he says a different criteria. Logic would dictate that it is determined by the country where the food was made. So what's the rationale for that distinction? Why are we going to say, in terms of the topic for us tonight, the question of is it considered a choshev, a royal food? There we're going to go by where it's eaten, but when in terms of the other issue, we would have gone by where it was made.
Because the act of eating is what makes it a choshev. Like, the whole hetzer comes from the fact that it would or would not be eaten at a state dinner. So
you're almost all the way there. Just add one layer, which is, remember 2 weeks ago, last week, I take that back, what was the reason for that heter to begin with? Why should that matter? Because if it's not so fancy,
you don't invite someone over special.
Or
you're not going to cook it special.
Or you won't feel
indebted.
So that goes, of course, based on me, where I'm eating it. So you are brilliant, as usual. Mm-hmm. Exactly, that is what Rav Belsky. Again, Rav Belsky, the great Rashiva of Tarvadas, one of the postkim of the OU. If you look, and again, right below in that footnote 45, he says, Kach shamati mehagri Belsky shlita. This is what we saw Belsky said. And what's the rationale? Because Ola al-shokha malachim toloi emhu davar chashev be'enei hamakabel shiyavili de kirva. The whole fear is that I is the one who got the food. When we're appreciative of the non-Jew who cooked it for me, that will lead to an inappropriate, intimate, too comfortable a relationship, and who knows where that could lead. But if I don't feel that, then there's nothing to talk about. So that's, of course, going to all go by me where I'm eating it. So if I'm in Mexico, ooh, tortilla. But in Baltimore, it's a tortilla.
What's the distinction, though, between where it was cooked?
Because there, in terms of the issue of whether you eat it raw or not, there, essentially, the factor is, do we view what the, if you remember what we learned from Rashi, Rashi says if it's edible raw, then we don't really view the act that the non-Jew did of cooking it as halachically cooking it, meaning, obviously it was cooked, but meaning nothing significant happened to it. So that whole criteria goes by where it was cooked. This is going by where it was eaten.
Because if when it gets to New York, it's raw. The fact that when it was wherever it was...
No, that doesn't help.
No, where it was cooked.
No, where it was cooked.
Like if it was canned and cooked in China, and in China they eat it raw anyways.
Okay, so the act isn't really visual there, not a question of...
The question was, again, if... What do you say? If it's cooked in a place where it is not eaten raw, mm-hmm. Eaten in a place where it is eaten raw, or vice versa. As I'm eating it in a plate, not...
It's eaten raw there, but it's not eaten raw where you are, but it was cooked over there where they do eat it raw.
Yes.
It's not really an act of cooking because...
So, okay, well, either way, l'kul or l'chumra, the point was, when we want to know, is this potentially a problem or not, we're going to go based on the standards of where it was cooked. Okay. Because the whole issue is, when they were cooking it, did they contribute something significant or not? So that question we can only answer based on the culture where it was being cooked, not in the other direction. Okay, this is just... That, again, we're not doing Davar Nachal Chai tonight. The issue is, you want to ask yourself the question, is this considered a chash of a food or not? So we don't say, oh, I remember back when, in Alter Haim, we used to eat this. That's good for nostalgia, but it's irrelevant. Time and place, we're very current. We're not fossilized in Judaism. We're vibrant. Wherever you are at that time and place, that's where you're about to eat it. That's when you have to ask yourself this question. If it was cooked by a non-Jew, is this something that I'm eating that would be where I am at the time that I'm living and eating it, something that would be considered this kind of a food or not? If yes, then you might have a problem. And if not, it doesn't matter that in another place or even at another time it would have been. We go by the here and the now. I now want to get to the very interesting topic of how we define the whole issue of what does it mean, Ola al Shulchan Malachim? And as a way of getting into this question, and perhaps showing that the very interesting debate, which I have alluded to once or twice in contemporary times, or relatively contemporary times, earlier 20th century times, relating to the King or Queen of England, that perhaps that may even be an earlier debate, perhaps even two different opinions in Tosfos. What do I mean? Let's see the next source. The fourth source on your sheet, Tosfos and Avodah Zarah. We have seen half of this Tosfos before. But now I'm giving you the full, not the full Tosfos, it's a big Tosfos, but I'm giving you two answers to the same question. The question was, hinted at in the first three words, Bechlal din sheichar ein le'esor. The assumption of Tosfos, of their Shonim, is that you can drink a beer. Now there aren't that many Jews, I guess other than the Maccabi beer, right? There aren't too many Jews in the beer business. Whether you're getting the German beer, you get the Mexican beer, the beer from Colorado or St. Louis, wherever they make them in America, they're not Jews. Or Milwaukee. Isn't Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis?
What?
Isn't Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this Milwaukee is the big city, though. You're right. But I think only because the baseball stadium there is called Busch Stadium. So I think that they're too. But anyway, as I'm proud to say that I've barely once in my life sipped a little bit of a beer to know that I'll never ever even want to do that again the rest of my life. So I have never... I turn down beer every Shalom Zachar I go to. Literally, I've never drank it. No interest. So I don't really know so much about it. But the point is that in the Rishonim, they drank it. This was a regular drink in Europe. This is a drink. This is what they did. So they all assumed that they were drinking it. The question is, why isn't that prohibited? Obviously, you cook the barley and the whatever else. Why isn't cooking the beer, why isn't that a problem of Bishalakum? So we saw one answer a while ago, which I'll review, but there's really two answers. Look at what Tosfos says. What's our first instinct? Maybe it'll be mutter because it's edible raw. But it's not edible raw, right? You try
all
the food, the hops, the barley, whatever. Of course, it's completely inedible raw. So that's not going to help you. So why should it be permissible? So he gives his first answer. And this is the one we have not yet seen before. Kol she'enu al shulchan malachim ein bo mishum bishul v'kochavim. Says Tosfos, these kind of beers, and again, without going into details, I don't exactly know what Tosfos is referring to. Could have been that there's different levels of beers, and the kings did have certain fancier alcoholic beverages. We know they had plenty of alcohol. But the beer that Tosfos is referring to, that the Hamon, that the Jews were drinking in his day, this was not Olal Shochem Lachem. It wasn't a fancy drink. They didn't drink it. So that's why it should be Mutter.
That is fancy. They did drink it. That was the drink, right? I mean...
So I guess, as I say, it must be. Okay, it must be that obviously there's different. There were different kinds of stuff. He speaks about. He mentions, if I'm not mistaken, Sheikh Arshel. Does he say Saorim, and or Chitim, maybe like wheat or barley, and sometimes like in Mitosos and other times they speak about of Tamarim, of dates. So maybe there was a higher quality of beer that's not being included, but I guess the beer that was relevant. So the first answer is, it's permissible because this is not a fancy drink. Okay. But Tosfos gives a second answer. Here I'll just paraphrase it. This is what we saw a month ago, where Tosfos says, since beer is essentially water, right? What bracha do you make on it? You don't make a mezonos, even though barley and wheat are usually mezonos products. You make a shahakol. Because the defining characteristic of it is water. It's water that has a flavor. The flavor comes from the liquefied barley. But it's water. So, the implications of that we discussed a way back. I don't want to review that now. Here's the question. Now that we're learning the topic of Shulchan Malachim, royal standards, once Tosfos gave the first answer, why did he need to give a second answer? So presumably they're arguing, and presumably the second answer doesn't think that the first answer is sufficient. So what are they arguing about? So one might say, well, maybe the second answer had the exact instinct we had. What are you talking about? They do drink beer at the kings. That's impossible. That's what we call a machlokas in Metzius. They're arguing over the facts. And whenever, ever possible in learning, whether it's in Gemara or the commentaries on Gemara, we do everything we can, including turning ourselves into a pretzel sometimes, to avoid making the assumption that a debate is an argument over the facts. Because, again, the obvious point being, if that's all it was, couldn't they have just found them out? It's hard to imagine in the Gemara or a Tosfos that they would leave an argument for all generations just based on a question of, go out and look. Sometimes the Gemara will say, what do they do? Tzu'uru, go out and look. We would have left it like that. So most likely they agree that it's not drunk at the royal dinners. And yet, for some reason, the second opinion still thinks it could be a problem. It would it not be for the answer of the water. So what's that debate dependent on? So, Rabbi Ganak from the OU, in his article, which we've quoted now quite a few times, he suggests that this may relate to the heart of the matter. And in order to get to that heart of the matter, we are now finally, it's always anticlimactic when you finally get to something, going to get to the issue of the Queen of England, bless her, and sardines. Okay? Look at the next source, Rabbi Nachum Ganek. And he asks the question, how do we define this whole category? How do we define this? Im hakavana hi shehei ma'achal ha-ra'ui l'su'udas melech b'chol tif arto. Is this what a melech, or some other royal personage, as we've seen, doesn't have to be literally a king, will eat at a fancy state dinner, banquet, something to that effect. B'mechinas suda shlomo, right? It's like a dahainu b'chol atachlios haruuyos lamalchos, right? With all of the fancy china and the fancy this and the person blowing the trumpet and the honor guard and this, that, and the other. 8 forks, 4 knives. And will it be served at such a dinner or not? Is that the question? Which, frankly, is what we've been assuming until now. But what's the other possibility? The way he phrases it very succinctly in his Hebrew, O ein hakavana ella shlo yehe ma'achal garua. Or is it another way of saying something much less razzle-dazzle? And just saying, listen, it has to be something that a king would be willing to eat. even in his pajamas. Garua means bad, not disgusting. Meaning, certain people who are obviously very poor or whatever, so they might be willing to eat almost anything. But someone who's a fancy, proper person, so they don't always eat, you know, creme brulee or whatever, you know, and fancy steaks. But at the same time, they're only going to eat foods which are of a certain minimum standard. Something that's substandard, they're not going to eat because it's beneath them. So is that all we're ruling out? Something that a king wouldn't even, again, I used the example last week of, you know, the queen when she comes down for breakfast in her pajamas. You know, no one's around. So certain things, even then, she wouldn't eat because she's the queen. She couldn't eat that. But she, you know, she may very well eat cornflakes or something. I don't know. That's like beneath her. But you wouldn't serve cornflakes at the state dinner. So that's the question. How do you define it? What the queen eats at the state dinner or what the queen is willing to eat in her pajamas for breakfast? Everyone understand the question? And obviously, if you assume the latter, that's much more machmir. Right? You'd include most foods. Right. As opposed to, we have at least a chance of ruling out some things if we say it has to be something to be eaten at a state dinner. So in order to flesh out this question, Rabbi Ganak quotes a story, a Maisa Chaya, a real story, Kach Haya, with ancient Baltimore origins, or at least connections, I should say. So Rabbi Ganak knows Rabbi Schwab because eventually he moved to Washington Heights. Breuer's fame. But Rabbi Schwab, of course, got his American start in Baltimore. So Rabbi Schwab of Baltimore American fame told Rabbi Ganak the following story. Shapam shome achazon ish. Ma da'ato al divrei achilas hasardinim. Hanim karem bakufsaos. He asked the chazon ish, what's the halacha about those sardines you buy in the cans? I guess you could buy fresh sardines somewhere. I don't know. But
so
no, I'm saying, I don't think, does he mean that incidentally, or are there ways you can buy it where it wasn't at all cooked before, like totally raw? I don't know. Okay. So what does the chazanish say? Im asura mishum bishlakam or lo, veheshiv lo chazanish, asur. Says the chazanish, you're not allowed to eat sardines. This is another food that I happen to not eat. But I have vivid memories of my father at various points eating sardines. So I have a family interest in this shaila, not a personal one. The Chazayin Ish said you can't eat sardines. Rav Shaila Hagrash, then Rav Schwab said, what do you mean? Halo kama Russia yeshiva me Europa nahaguba zaheter. Rav Schwab says, in Europe, many of the great Gedolim were eating sardines. How could you say it's usher? Well, how you Oakland sardinim? Ukanira Rav Schwab says, and what must have been the reason? The sovrim hayu, the ain ola shalcham alachem. Sardines is not remotely a fancy food. It's a real ultimate finger food. And I can tell you, we never served this at the table. This is my father late at night, you know, like while the news was on or something, you know, the midnight snack, he'd pull out the sardines. It's not, you know, it's not a fancy food, sardines, at least not in most contexts, that's for sure. And presumably that was the rationale in Europe, that's why they were makel. Even though, again, it's obviously being cooked and processed by non-Jews. So what does the Chazon Ish respond? This is the underlying part. V'heshivo ha-Chazon Ish ta'af sardinim. Re'uyim la'alos ha-shocham alachim. Even the sardines are considered royal food. O la'al-shocham alachim. Why? And this is a quote. Rabbi Ganak says that obviously the conversation was in Yiddish, but he's translating it as a quote in Hebrew. I have it in quote marks. Shaharigam Melech Anglia Ochel Sardinim Ba'ad Aruchat Boker Shalau. The king and the queen mum, this is what they eat for breakfast. And if the king and the queen are eating it for breakfast, so that must be Olah Shalcham Alachim. I mentioned last week, right, that there's all these, what they call in the news, royal watchers. So usually it's a complete waste of time at best, often stalking and other, perhaps even killing, right, the late princess. She fled them. I don't live in a cave. I know some things about them. But sometimes I guess it was good. Somebody, right, you can imagine, the halachic version of the tell-all book.
You can tell everything that they eat has a symbol on it. They can put a seal on it that they eat.
That's good advertising, you're saying.
Well, I feel like the anti-hetter, anti-hasher, but yeah.
Yes, I'm saying advertising not to help the Jews, but it would be good advertising in general. Ooh, I'm eating the same sardines as the queen.
It's on
okay, so there you go. So that's how the Chazon Ish knew. I don't know. So what is? How does this relate? So look at the next paragraph. Rabbi Ganak says, "Uchanireh." It would appear the hamachloka shebein achazon ish v'shar gadolim tluya. Oh, it's a typo again. That should be a yud. Tluya. B'hagadaras din zesh ol hashulchan malachim. This debate between all the European Rosh Hashivas and Rabbi Schwab on the one hand, and Chazon Ish on the other hand, gets to the heart of the matter. Im hakavana shel yehamachal gerua, because if you think it's the second version, that all we mean is that it can't be something that's so substandard that the king would never even eat it. As you sardinim asurim, kim she'enim achal gerua. You see that the sardines are not substandard, that a king would never even, it's beneath him. He's willing to eat it, again, maybe in breakfast. Again, his breakfasts are fancier than my dinners, but still, it's not a state dinner, but so what? He eats it, and if that's the case, so you see that it's not substandard, it should be usur. But if you say, no. It means it has to be suitable for a royal, fancy state dinner. So if that's the case, they have not yet served sardines at a royal get-together. And perhaps, Rabbi Ganak then adds, this is the debate about beer as well. When the king, again, perhaps not for breakfast, depending on the nature of the king, although, again, we've all walked past a bar, you know, well before lunchtime and seen those two guys, you know, nursing that beer mug. But all right. But assuming that the king's not even drinking it for breakfast, but maybe for the late night snack when he's hanging out with his buddies watching, I don't know, cricket or whatever he does, soccer, football, I'm sure he drinks beer. So if that's the definition, is the king willing to drink beer? You bet you. Of course the king would drink beer. So then maybe that's sufficient for the definition. But if you say, no, when he has the state dinner, when he has the king of Portugal over, so what do they drink? Perhaps it's only wine, scotch, or even maybe we're saying some fancier version of the beer. But if that's the issue, that may very well be at the heart of the debate between the two opinions about beer. So we have beer and sardines. And again, we could think of many other things. It's edible. The king might eat it. It might be his favorite snack food. Right? President Clinton was famous for loving pizza, right? They used to have these like late night meetings, and they, you know, at midnight they'd order the White House, you know, take out pizza. And he would go through a pie. Wonderful. But no one, right, he didn't serve it at state dinner. But no one would say, again, maybe, I don't think, it's pizza, Ola Shocham Alachim, because President Clinton ate it. So it depends. If you hold that sardines is a problem because the King of England ate it, so maybe pizza would be also Kron the Chazon Ish. But if you hold that it has to do with how does he, you know, when he would host the Prime Minister of England for a fancy state dinner, so would Clinton have pizza? Presumably not. So then it's the same question. It's the same question. So let's take a look at something that's quoted from behind me on the Star K website. Foods that are not prestigious and would not be served at a king's table when hosting an official state dinner. Rabbi Heinemann, the Star K, assumes the more lenient psak. And look at the bottom part where I have underlined any food that would not be served at a wedding feast because it's not elegant. For example, donuts. That just goes to show you that we're not picking on foods because there's no one who loves donuts more than me. You know, but again, donuts aren't served. Was certainly not qualified for talking. Although you should know, I don't know if I said, there was a trend a few years ago at some of the fancier weddings, especially the evening weddings, where on your way out, after they had stuffed you for 5, 6, 7 hours, there was like a big thing of like hot chocolate and coffee and like stuff for the road, like especially if there was out of town guests. People are going to be driving somewhere. Right? Sorry?
Like you have to drive home for 10 minutes.
Right, or you were driving further, who knows? Exactly right. So then, but again, even then, that's not at the meal. That's in the hall on the way out.
It's for your car, right?
Right. Exactly right.
And they gave a copy of the New York Times at the New York weddings.
Did they?
A few of them did.
Why? What was the... Oh, because the wedding announcement was in there, you mean?
No,
there's a thing in New York. You put that in the paper the night before.
You're getting your snack for breakfast.
Oh, really?
Something to read.
That I never saw before. Look at that. That's why. Okay, listen. Wedding. There's one person in the room making a wedding currently. Look. Okay, Baltimore Sun maybe. Now let's transition. I just said it, but I'll say it again. We're asking why would there be a debate about whether beer is Olah Shulchan Malachim or not. So Rabbi Ganak suggests that perhaps it's the same issue. Namely, is it a question of whether the king is willing to drink the beer in private? Or at some more casual function? Presumably, yes. So if you assume that that's a sufficient standard, just like sardines, since the king eats them privately or casually, so then beer should also be olah shalchem olachem. And then you'd have to come up with another reason to be mekel because it's dominantly water. But if you assume that we only go by things that are fancy fancy and at state dinners, the assumption was that that's not what this beer or any beer in that time was being used for. They were using wine or other alcoholic beverages. That would be the first answer to Tosfos, who could say we can be lenient because it's not olah shalchem olachem. Okay, I'll give now see a third version of this, which also takes us into another topic in general. What about canned food? Right, canned food in general is obviously not as fancy as fresh food. So, yes.
Is the question whether it's cooked that way or whether the category is?
So that's good, sharp as usual. That will be what we'll end off with tonight as an open question, which we'll transition into next week. That is a question. In other words, if you have one food, which can be cooked in multiple different ways, sometimes it's made very casually, sometimes made very fancy. So when it's made very fancy, so then of course you'd have to be machmir. The question is, would you go so far as to say, well, since, for example, potatoes, which we're going to get to, since potatoes can be eaten very casually, but they can also be made into very fancy dishes, they're now very often, right, the mashed potato bars and stuff at weddings, let alone as a fancy side dish at a main, why not? Certainly in our day and age, potatoes can be made very fancy. So would you say that even the casual version of the potatoes, like the baked potato, maybe the potato chips, would you say that you have to be machmir on those because potatoes as a category are olah al shalchem olachem because some versions of them can be made very fancy? So that's a question we'll see next week. But right now we'll assume no. We'll see. Yeah.
I have a question. I don't know if we ever discussed it, but it would seem to me that it's more about the relationship between you and the guy than about the type of food. Whereas, like, if you have a neighbor, then anything that he makes for you, even if it's not so fancy, you might feel more...
The answer is, you're right in theory.
Like,
you're right in theory. Well, we did discuss half of it. The first point you made, you're right in theory. If one wanted to be machmir intuitively, one could say, listen, almost anything, if I have a, you know, people are very close with their neighbors, and that could very well be, you know, if it's a non-Jewish neighbor, why not? So be machmir. So the answer is, but we're not. Because even though the original motivation for the whole halacha is this issue, but again, like we have in many other areas of halacha, nevertheless, covering as many cases for as many people over as many years, so to speak, Chazal made certain rules based on those principles. But nevertheless, once the principles were there, they made certain rules which covered what they thought were the most important cases, etc. The fact that this would be a loophole is okay. This slips through the cracks. Could you get yourself into trouble? Perhaps. But logically, you're right. Logically, one could have come to that conclusion. It's just that we don't. The other direction of, well, if I'm so far removed from Mr. Entenmann, so that we did discuss. Right, we discussed that logically, again, it's the flip side of the same question, and then we discussed it. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a tshuva. It was also Rabbi Ganek quoted this in this article that Rav Nata Greenblatt from Memphis. He asked Rav Moshe about the batei charosh, as it's called, the factories. The factory worker is so far removed from you. How could that possibly be a problem? You're going to marry the factory worker who you don't know working the 12 to 9 shift? I mean, it's impossible. And Rav Moshe said, logically, right, but we're machmir anyway. That seemed to be the minhag to be machmir. So in both cases, Lakula and Lachumra, we don't take it to its logical conclusion. So what about canned goods per se? Would you say that canned goods should be lenient across the board? Because generally speaking, we assume canned goods are not as fancy. So if you look at the last source on the page, it's the next paragraph from that same article from Rabbi Ganek, and he says the following. V'shamati pa'am imar Rabbi Ha'agoyin Rav Soloveitchik. People are buying canned foods. Turning over the page. People eat canned goods and they don't seem to be worried. So apparently there were other perhaps mitigating factors. But he said, one of the main reasons to be lenient. Period. Soloveitchik told him that canned goods are not. So Rabbi Ganek, in his mind, he assumes that this is all connected. Namely, would a king not eat a canned whatever for dinner at home? Perhaps he would. But when he has the state dinner, when the king of Portugal comes, so then everything has to be fresh. Of course he won't use canned. So Rabbi Ganek thought that this leniency is also based, that Rav Soloveitchik held, like Rav Schwab, like the European Rosh Hashivas with the sardines, that we go by what they use at a state dinner, and if they don't use canned goods, it should be lenient. He adds, for the sake of intellectual honesty, Ach lo shamati biur al nekud hanal. He says he didn't hear this final, you know, he didn't hear the Rav give that explanation of it, but in his mind, he associated this, and logically it seems to follow. So let's see what Rabbi Heineman says about it, because we've seen Rabbi Heineman himself, the Star K, he does accept that lenient position. We go based on state dinners. And here we have two very interesting things, one more generally, and one specifically about a time where the Star K had to deal with the White House chef. So the first thing he says is, Dorei Prishul Akma Pida Kandurds. The answer is, it depends. Now, you'll tell me, I think the next few sentences here are very unclear. Somebody tell me if they fully follow this. The answer is, it depends. Canned soups and pasta would present the problem of Bishul Akum with proper supervision. Canned fruit would not present a problem because it's usually eaten raw, as long as it's kosher equipment, etc., etc. So, at this point, did he tell you why soups and pasta? I guess because his point is that they wouldn't be eaten raw.
Right.
Yeah, but why? But if they're canned... Right, I don't know. Maybe what he's assuming. Canned vegetables that are either eaten raw or are not elegant enough to be served at state dinner would not have a bishul problem. Whole asparagus, when served alone, is a prestigious food. And therefore, canned whole asparagus should only be used with a reliable hechsher, which surely addressed the bishul akum issue. So, I wish this would have been written a little bit clearer with a little more explanation. So, he doesn't seem to have a blanket heter for it, but at least in principle, certainly seems to acknowledge this. And then it gets further confused because in the same article, a different paragraph is the following. The Star K asked the White House executive chef what the White House banquet policy is regarding the use of canned products for state dinners. A specific question was the policy regarding canned cranberry sauce. Now, this is a classic thing, right? You can buy fresh cranberries and make a fresher, or you can buy the canned cranberry sauce. We also asked whether potato chips are served at state dinners. So we'll get to potato chips in a future week, perhaps. But it's on the same essay. The chef's response was as follows. We would serve whatever the guest wants. However, we never served potato chips, nor do we ever use canned goods. Everything is prepared fresh, which is not surprising. The White House. So I don't know. Wouldn't you say, based on that paragraph, that even the canned soups would be mutter? That's not what he's saying, though. Of course, you need to make sure it's kosher. That goes without saying.
So then it's really not on us. It's really on the supervising.
No, the question is, no. The fact that the ingredients are kosher, that's always true.
Right.
The question is, does the mashgiach just need to make sure the ingredients are kosher? Or does the mashgiach need to be, let's say, turning on the oven, assuming that'll help when he's at the plant for Campbell's or whatever, whoever makes kosher canned soups? Yeah.
Salt-related question here.
Is it going to help us get to the bottom of this? Well, does anyone have a help, or I'll just leave that as a question for you?
Yeah, it sounds like from the first paragraph.
Oh, let's look at the last thing he says. Note one, he said there's two notes. One, note one, even though the White House may never use canned goods, if the food was first cooked before the canning process, and at that time it was usable for a state dinner and subsequently canned, again, I don't know how realistic or practical it is, but apparently some foods are cooked and then put in the can just for storage, as opposed to other foods, which we've seen when we discussed steaming.
Like the soup and the pasta.
Certain other foods, oh, maybe that's the answer then? And certain other foods, they're put in raw, and then there's some steaming process or whatever that cooks them when they're ready in the can.
So that's probably
right.
The soup has to be made ahead of time.
And
the pasta also can't be steamed.
Ah.
It has to be cooked and then put in the can versus vegetables, which are put
so the
in
question
the
is, and the so then the question is whether the OU is arguing on that point. The question is whether the OU is still would argue still on that point, because the bottom line is you buy it as a canned item. So,
if the argument is that it, the question is how it goes into the, two questions. One is how did it go in? Was it a fine food?
Right.
And then it got put into a can, so they wouldn't serve it because it's been put in a can, but what before it was.
Right. And even then, you could have an open question: does that matter or not? Or Heinemann's saying it would matter, and we would be machmir on that. Again, it's a little bit unclear. It's a little bit unclear to me. Yes.
Okay. So Bishul Akum is that you can't have it because it's been cooked. But I thought if you got involved later, so let's say you take.
That's
no,
I'm not answering you, because that is going to be exactly what we'll spend at least 1, 2, 3 weeks studying.
Okay.
We're going to get to that.
So
That is the issue of when a Jew participates, how does that help or does it? We haven't gotten to that. We haven't even raised the issue yet. We're still discussing 100% cooked by a non-Jew.
So canned vegetables that you could eat raw do not have to have a hechsher?
Unless it's asparagus.
Unless it's asparagus.
Something like that.
Green
meat. Again, it might. That's a separate issue, which I'm not at all prepared to discuss tonight.
Okay.
Is certain food, do you have to worry that as part of the processing there might be non-kosher ingredients?
Okay.
That's a completely separate issue. But from the person, and maybe the answer is no, but I'm not getting that. But the question of whether the very fact that you now have peas, that the peas were obviously cooked already. So it seems like you could be lenient. Again, from the bishop, you should be a more educated consumer. It doesn't actually matter because you'll see the OU or the Star K on it and then you'll buy it anyway. But the question is what did the OU have to worry about or the Star K have to worry about before they gave the hechsher? Did they just have to worry about the ingredients or do they also have to worry about who was doing the cooking?
But I thought now we don't have to worry about an OU or a Star K. We could buy vegetables without any.
That's a different issue, which is that's whether you're worried that there's actually some, you know, chemical compound in there from artificial flavoring or whatever.
I'm pretty sure that's a Star K.
Okay, I said I'm not discussing that.
But he does make the distinction between asparagus because that's the only canned vegetable that's olal shochem
alpha. Apparently so, right.
Now that makes sense.
I'm sorry, yes.
He mentions the cranberry sauce in here too.
Right, and I would think that you'd be lenient on that because obviously he's giving you the example no one in a fancy dinner is using canned cranberry sauce.
I would definitely agree with that.
But you still need to make sure that it's...
That, again, I'm not discussing whether you have to make sure that the ingredients are kosher that's a different issue.
Yeah, but that's a difference between cranberry sauce and vegetables. Vegetables don't have anything in them except vegetables and salt.
Or water, whatever, right. Okay, fair enough. Okay, let's move on to potatoes. It's very close to my heart as a descendant on my mother's side of Polish Yidden. Potatoes for breakfast, potatoes for lunch, potatoes for dinner. It's a shame that we don't have anyone from Hungary here. Okay, so part of the reason why I don't know why the Hungarians hate the Poles, but the reason that the Polish hated the Hungarians for all the years was because they thought they were snobs and looked down on them, because they were fancier, and the Poles were, by and large, much poorer and much simpler. That is true. We were smarter, more sophisticated, perhaps. But that is the age-old battle, which I am, again, a descendant of. And one of the ways where that was demonstrated had to do with food, right? And it's true. My Bubba used to tell me all the time, right. They had five recipes, and there's five different versions of potatoes, right, growing up. So this is an issue which was discussed going back at least 200 years or so, and then as recently as 100 years ago, and then we'll have to see how it comes in our generation. So the first verse is the Chachmas Adam, again, of Avram Danzig, one of the very important poskim. And he says the following, V'nira li, the peri shekoren. I'm not sure how to pronounce either of these.
Erd apple. It's an apple from the.
And that's erd apple. Good. In Hebrew, we'd call that tapuach adama. Potatoes. What does he say? Ole al shulchan malachim. Potatoes are fancy food, apparently, says the Chochmas Adam, and therefore, in theory, they would be a problem cooked by a non-Jew. Skipped below. He is famously debated. About 100 years later, by the Aruch HaShulchan, Tapuche Adama, potatoes. Nira de Elidas Daiti, Dizam Mikri, Ein Olal Shulchan Malachim. Nothing to worry about, right? The non-Jew behind the counter fries you some French fries? No problem, because it's not a fancy thing, potatoes. After all, he says, again, he's from Navardic, but he might have had my family in mind, I don't know. The Adua Shehi Achila Pshuta. It's a simple food. V'rak Dalas Ha'am Ochlen Oso. Only the poorer people eat it. L'marba Mifnei Aniyusam Udoch HaKam. Because they're in such difficult straits. And then he adds, again, this is just fascinating. Social commentary from the Aruch HaShulchan. V'af Gam Ashirim Ochlen Osam Lefrakim. Every now and then, a rich person will allow himself to be caught dead eating potatoes. Zeo ifne godo ribuyam. They're very big and they're plentiful and they have certain side advantages. B'chas shalom lo ifne shumachol chashuv. Not because the potatoes are a fancy food. V'al shalom molochim pevadai lo sala. And they're certainly not going to be eaten on the fancy royal tables. Then he adds an interesting side point. V'rak bezman bishulam. When they're, once, only once they're cooked, shem adayin rachim, and they're soft. Then derech hasarim leknosam lesumam be'eza machal betavlon. Then sometimes they're then used, apparently in those day and age, sometimes people would buy cooked soft potatoes. And then would then use them, grind them up, make them into a spice or a side dish or something. So, already then. But a raw potato, which, or even a more basic potato, which again, other people might be willing to eat, that is for sure not. No, he didn't. He's giving a very specific side thing with this sarim thing. Don't be confused with that. The main point is that he says, the bottom line is he says there's these quirks in his sociological theory, which he's acknowledging, but fundamentally he's saying this is poor man's food, this is not fancy food, and therefore it should be permissible.
Didn't he end up by saying, but when they're cooked and they're soft, they can be eaten?
No, then they're made into these spices.
It's a side thing. Then he adds, Ahmad Sasi Lagodal Echad, right? Then he notes that there are people, i.e., parentheses, are chachmas adam. Right? It's a major, major debate. So what does he say? Ulai debizman akadmon. Going back in the day when the chachmas adam lived. Shlahaya bezahanimsa. Hayamachal chashuv. When it wasn't really located there, it had to be imported. Oh, fancy food. But ze erach mea shanim shuva min hazeh mehamedinos shemeever liyam hagorol. Ho, then 100 years ago they had to import the potatoes. So then it was fancy. Aval ata mehamedinos seinu, in our country. Shezorim oso lemerba, right? They plant them by the thousands, by the multitudes. Hu machal rov hahamon hamon v'hu machal pashut ma'od. Right, this is a simple and it's cheap, a simple and cheap get. In that case, in the early Nastati, the Ain Shaykh Lomerza Ola Shachem Alachim. So now you should ask me exactly your question. How is this a debate? Because what did he basically tell us? What did we start the shir with?
Depends
where. So what is the Aruch HaShulchan? He can't understand how could the Chochmas Adam think it's Asur. So he says, perhaps it was a more chashuv a food in the time of the Chochmas Adam. Usher, which is what the Chacham Sadam says. But in his day and age, where it became Ma'achal Pashut, why doesn't he agree? No, on the contrary. He's saying it's impossible nowadays to be Machmir.
It's something that changes.
Right, that's what he's saying. And if it's interesting enough, but if you go back, now go back to the Chacham Sadam for a moment, a part that I underlined, the Chacham Sadam himself says this. Hakol holech achar hamakom, mashadech le'echol ba'osom makom. So listen, you can't expect the Chacham Sadam to be a prophet, to know what's going to happen 100 years after he dies. But in hindsight, one could suggest that there really is no argument. He said what he said in his day, he said what he said in his day. Now look at our day. Rav Wozner dying from Bnei Brak. Mikom Mokom. The Shut Shevet Halevi. To be lenient. Aim was at Tom Hogan Lahatir. You can't use that as a leniency in our day. I'll call upon him Bizman Hazeh, Olin, Al Shulchan Malachim, Bechol Suda Chashuva. People have fancy potatoes. So he thinks the Galgal, it's turned, the wheel has turned. So look at the last source, and this will conclude and transition us for next week. It is quite difficult to establish whether a particular food is considered fit to be served at a royal table, and a status of certain foods with regard to this issue may vary from time to time. Furthermore, the fact that a certain food may have been served at a specific royal table or a specific person of stature at a certain time would not include it in this category. I would think that's a very important statement, because every now and then you read about certain presidents, for example, have a favorite food. So, right, you know, Bush likes the Texas, whatever, that kind of food. So it's very possible that there are times, even in very fancy things, that they will serve it, again, because of that cultural thing. But the point is, that would not be a problem for us. If that's idiosyncratic. But generally speaking, if the food's not considered royal, we don't consider it royal for us. Nowadays, potatoes, that's spelled correctly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Speaking of presidential hopefuls and otherwise, I'm still, if it wouldn't be for a spell check, I'd be too nervous to ever publish anything. I'm so nervous from that.
Yeah,
nowadays, but...
Vice president.
Right. Potatoes are served in all different varieties at weddings and dinners. Perhaps even the Aruch HaShulchan would agree that today's potatoes are considered to be fit or served at a royal table. So here's the question. If somebody makes for you fancy potatoes, the types are fancy, then for sure it would be a problem. The question, which we'll leave with for tomorrow, next week, is, I never saw French fries served at a fancy dinner. And if you did, what about potato chips?
They're served at very fancy restaurants.
But I don't know if that's sufficient. Trust me, I know I like those restaurants. I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy, and the potatoes in my case are the French fries. But let's say potato chips. Right, we have Edus from the White House chef. And again, it's Mestama, right? So the question is, would something like a potato chips, for example, or perhaps French fries or not, would that be a problem? Do you say that we have to be machmer on the potato chips because there are other ways, all the other fancy ways to make potatoes? We'll leave that question in Mirtz Hashem until next week.
So we're holding then.